Hello, and welcome to the Software Stories podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to software experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes, and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Thank you, and enjoy the show. So we've got Ross Slate here from Somo. He's the Chief Strategy Officer. Absolute pleasure having you on the show, Ross.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for inviting me in.
Thanks for this, mate. Very much looking forward to the conversation. There's a lot of exciting things going on, as we were just kind of talking about beforehand. And, you know, I wanted to kind of dive straight in and ask about Somo and what it really means to kind of be a digital product accelerator. But, you know, and we'll get into the detail about that. But I was curious, just I suppose, to continue the pre-recorded chat that we were just having about, you know, macro impacts on things like this and accelerating products. You know, how much are kind of external factors taken into consideration, I suppose, from a strategic point of view? Or am I perhaps overthinking that one?
No, I don't think you're overthinking it at all. I think that the external factors is probably, it's driving the marketplace. It's driving the need for transformation. Given the choice and given the requirements for investment and organizational change and cultural change that companies have to undergo, big companies have to undergo, or startups have to address, it's basically because of one major external factor is that end user expectations have been set incredibly high by a number of different services out there, from the big guys and the Googles and the Ubers all the way through to you know, the neobanks, all of these people are setting customer expectations of how what they're doing is taking the customer expectations and setting them at a bar, a level that is incredibly high. Mm. So if you're playing in any sector at the moment, your customers are expecting you to reach a level of engagement, sort out and triage problems, make things simple and easy on their journeys, which is driving this need to be in a position of transforming your business to follow through. Because I think, you know, even 15 years, even a decade ago, businesses drove what customer expectations were. You know, here's the product. This is what you've got. Like it or lump it. This is the new customer. Now, with the plethora of choice and with this the bar being raised every single time by these big companies in terms of what a good experience is, that's changed it, the dynamic between customers and businesses. So now businesses are following the customer needs. And that's the biggest external factor, because customer expectations, if you don't meet them, then you're going to not even acquire that customer. You're not even going to have a loyal relationship with that customer. You're going to be in a position whereby you're in a sort of diminishing marketplace, because customers will very happily and with ease and friction move to another service or another product like that. Just they're off, they're gone. Mm. Because we've made this a friction-free marketplace for the majority of services down there. Now, of course, there are certain businesses where there's still a lot of friction to be able to switch, a lot of friction for the customer to find out who the competitors will be and to switch to them. But those are reducing in number day by day. So we're in a position whereby I think, you know, it is totally the external factor of customers now saying, this is what I want. If you want to have my business, this is what I expect of you. And every single time that you fail on that, not only will I take my business elsewhere very quickly, but I'll tell everyone else about that. Mm. And you know, social media has been an outpouring of frustration by customers, not just frustration of the individual problems on their journeys and, you know, the service quality and all those type of things, which get picked up on the Twitters and everything on that basis. But it's more about this outpouring of the fact that the last hundreds of years, they've been just given something and said, here you go, like it or lump it. And now they're in control.
Yeah, interesting. And it's almost like you say, dare I say it, but it feels like the technology aspect of it has almost had like a diminishing return, and it's the about the kind of the experience. And so I think for me, from my experience, nowhere, clearly nowhere near to your level, of course, but you know, it almost to address the product issues, you have to look internally and look at things like the organizational structure and the efficiencies within that and the way that they're working, as much as it's like, let's just throw some tech at this and try and solve the problem.
Yeah, completely. I mean, this is why it's transformation. This is about taking a company that is, let's take a corporate that's been around for 20, 30 years or whatever. It's got into a way of doing things. It's got a way of expectations, and it's well-oiled, and it's very efficient in the way it does things. But as soon as you start to change what the expectations are and the service and product level, so the technology is really at the arrowhead, that's where the change point happens. What flows through that is a massive amount of process and organizational change that is required, because you're having to do things in different ways, and you're having to deal with a massive amount of technical debt, legacy technical issues with regards to platforms that have been built that are just not able to be re-engineered to be able to provide these front-end services. But you're also, you know, in organizations which traditionally have been, you know, command and control, siloed-based, you know, reporting structures. So organizationally, that has to change, particularly if you're starting to bring more agility into the front end. But also then that impacts most on the company culture. You know, beforehand, you know, I think the last 20 years, it's been how do we return as much value to shareholders as possible has been the underlying, you know, C-level remit and board remit. And I think now it's a case of it's wider than just shareholders. It's about stakeholders. It's about society as a whole. It's about our employees and their health and their mental health, and making, you know, the fact that employees can switch so quickly and easily between the amount of jobs that are available to them there. How can we create a workforce that is really enjoying and feeling that they've got a mission to be able to solve something, a purpose, to solve something for that end customer? And that's a big cultural change, and that's the hardest thing. So, I mean, technology you might be able to change in on product in, you know, a year. You know, organizationally, the impact of that is probably a couple of years, 2-3 years worth of organizational change. But culturally, I mean, there you're talking about overcoming, you know, in certain cases, decades of a particular culture, and you're in a position where that takes the longest to change. And where you see really successful digital transformations of businesses, you understand that's led from the top. It's led from the fact that the board feel that it matters to them, that it matters that this company changes, and they will steamroller issues internally and objections internally, operationally and culturally, to be able to focus the business purely on serving that end customer and then the other stakeholders and society as a whole. But importantly, then that's going to provide as much value to shareholders as possible.
Interesting. I suppose it means that you're well positioned is the bottom line as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've been doing this now with Somo for about 10 years. We came in from when mobile started to take off in sort of the smartphone era, which we knew fundamentally from our collective backgrounds, our, you know, decades in digital, you know, everything from search and from social to the traditional more website of things. And when the founders started postulating about what the business was there, we saw that mobile was going to fundamentally change the experience with the end customer. Suddenly being able to access everything quickly, easily, and efficiently for that customer is going to have to impact businesses further. So you start off as a business, as we have, by making change at the product level. And as you slowly work through that, those product changes, the business realizes it has to change organizationally and process-wise, and it has to change culturally. So a lot of our work now is done on the sort of, you know, the organizational aspect thing. You know, what does great product leadership look like in a business? And how does that affect the rest of the departments in the business? And how can we start to break down that siloed mentality in a business and start to become more agile across every single aspect, not just in the product delivery aspect of that? And what does that mean culturally? What does it mean to start thinking about purpose and value to a larger set of stakeholders, including your employees and the end customers, rather than just focusing on the financial shareholder as being the primary value for the business, basically.
Yeah, people just can't get away with it. I think transparency has demanded this, like you were saying earlier on, and I think from a consumer's perspective, it's never been more exciting. But, you know, I'm curious whether, you know, a lot of the business, obviously I don't want you to mention any names or anything inappropriately, but I just wonder whether a lot of the businesses from like legacy type businesses or legacy products. I'm just curious, or is it new products that need that kind of products acceleration help? What would you say the kind of the weight is in that?
God, that's an interesting one, because I think that I think everyone needs it, right? I think all companies will need to be more customer centric, but the reality behind this is that a lot of legacy companies will only start to pay attention when they are being disrupted. And they're being disrupted by startups and scale-ups. And in doing so, that's what starts them to think, oh, well, hold on a minute. Why are these small upstarts getting, you know, market traction and serving customers better and getting better customer satisfaction results than us? And that starts to set the ball rolling. So they don't understand they have changed, but as it's always the way, it's different to driving a speedboat versus driving an oil tanker, right? So things take time to shift in larger companies. And my feeling is that it happens on a sector-by-sector basis. As soon as a sector starts to become truly disrupted, you get to a position whereby the incumbents have to embrace and lean forward into that disruption and change themselves, because there's no other option, else they won't be around. And so, you know, it started off in the music and the entertainment sector. You know, it's moved into the auto, into the financial sector right now at the moment, is seeing that massive amount of disruption going on. And there's still obviously sectors which have yet to be truly disrupted. You know, we're starting to see it, for example, in the legal sector with the role of artificial intelligence in data in the legal sector. And we start to see it in property, and we start in real estate, and we start to see it in travel. In fact, what's interesting is that some sectors you would think would have leaned in further haven't leaned in as much. So the travel sector is a great example of this, whereby when you have disruptors like Airbnb coming into play, and when you think about back into the very, very old days of digital, when the whole unbundling of the package holiday and the aggregators and the OTAs in those sectors, the Expedias of this world and everyone, really disrupted what it meant to be a travel service. They haven't really fundamentally changed as much. I think that's probably a combination of the fact that they haven't had to change as much because they haven't had as much pressure from startups as maybe in other sectors. But it's also, I think, because they're dealing with big legacy tech issues. And that takes a long, long time to try and change anything.
Yeah. Well, of course, yeah. Well, I can't even imagine what a 40-year-old technical debt looks like, to be quite frank. I think that's something that I'm glad I'm not involved in.
Well, I mean, it looks like a system that was built in the 1960s running transactions, which no one knows how to fix now. But that's what it looks like in his worst situation.
Yeah, I could only imagine. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think that I think what initially comes to mind for me as well is from a challenging perspective is how far to think, because it seems that there's a lot of reactive tendencies towards solving a product issue based on, I don't know, user feedback. But then you perhaps have solved something reactively, but then by the time you've solved something reactively, you're still then behind because then things have evolved again. And the demands has again shifted. So when you kind of map out a project like that, like what is the kind of the best practices to ensure that, you know, there is at least you are catching up with the lag, and it's not like we're just kind of, I don't know, putting out fires.
Yeah. So this is about, from my perspective, very, very strong product leadership, which is quite a new discipline, the sort of product owner basis. But that product owner is going to have control of understanding exactly what the customer journey is today and what the customer journey, which they would love to have, is going to be in the future. And along that way, you're going to identify all the friction and all the barriers and all the issues that are sitting on that customer journey from a front-end perspective all the way through to a technical perspective, organizational perspective, pricing, all those other aspects of things. And it comes down to prioritization, ultimately. It comes down to having a product leader that can prioritize the which parts of the customer journey need to be addressed at what point. And it's always a balancing act, because there are loads of things that you might want to do, but the question is that going to give massive customer benefit? But is it also going to give business benefit? Is it going to be a technical nightmare to try and put through, or is it going to be easy to put through? So the product leader basically takes the business requirements, the customer requirements and understanding and insights, and the technical requirements. And through that, through the magic of their role, comes out with a series of prioritizations, which the business then follows through. Those prioritizations have to be done in an agile manner, on the basis that you're constantly reacting to both internal and external forces, and you know, developments in the marketplace, new competitors coming in, new requirements from customers going through. So all the way through, that prioritization is constantly being validated. Mm. And one of the big things about product leadership is in companies and acceleration is this mitigation of risk, that as you go forward, actually, the faster you go, you're having to validate quicker, and therefore that mitigates risk quicker. It sounds almost counterintuitive. You think that, you know, if I sat down and did my normal, you know, Gantt chart and my normal Prince 2 type way of doing things, and I spec everything out up front and everything, that's mitigating risk. Actually, it isn't. That's adding more risk in, because by the time you've done that, you're absolutely right. You're in a position whereby the market might have changed, the business might have different requirements, the customer might have different requirements. So actually, by being more agile and prioritizing and constantly validating with the customer throughout that process to what the prioritization is going to be, you're at a point whereby you're sailing as close as you possibly can. I like to think of it as that is like taking a little sailing ship and being able to tack against the winds. And so for me, product leaders are the people who are constantly saying, like, the wind's coming from over there, and that wind might be, you know, a new set of customer requirements or a new external factor of a competitor coming into the marketplace. I'm going to have to tack against that. So I'm going to change my prioritization to get there as quickly as possible. Now, obviously, the thing that drives this forward is the ability for the company to be 100% behind those decisions and for it to fund those decisions properly. And the biggest challenge, I think, at the moment in larger companies is that the end client is actually the CFO. And the CFO wants to mitigate the risk and see as much return as possible coming from the investment that is being put behind these type of programs. But in doing so, there's still, I think, in a lot of cases, some misunderstandings about the fact that if you move fast, that's going to increase the risk and not bring about the certainty that they require. Whereas every time that we do it with our clients, we find that by moving quick and accelerating quickly and validating at every single stage and prioritizing it, making sure that we are providing a complete mitigation against the risks of that sort of long-term project.
It is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Everyone kind of wants to accelerate their efforts these days. And, you know, at the end of the day, these teams that are, I suppose, investing in organizations like you and stuff, the finance has to be back in and the justification for it has to be there. Is it a position that you end up having to put yourselves in, or is that really the pressure on them and it's like, this is our service? How does that kind of balance work? Because I can imagine that being one of the real kind of pain points, really, that could be a barrier to, you know, truly executing on like a full digital product acceleration.
Yeah, I think, our view is that you have to have everyone aligned at the board level to be able to successfully transform.
Mm.
And in doing so, that, you know, you've got to present the right strategic and business case for the reasons for transformation. You've got to give a very clear North Star vision of where you're going to be in 2 to 3 year time, 2 to 3 years time, and be able to explain what the value of that is going to be back to the business, in, you know, be that in increased customers, be that increased loyalty, be that in shareholder value, whatever that will be. So you need to ensure that alignment happens. I mean, increasingly, I think in larger businesses, as they become more product orientated and customer centric, they are of a position whereby those discussions are happening on a continuous level with the senior leadership teams and the boards to ensure that everyone is on that journey. But there's no point trying to go into a journey of transformation without having total alignment at board level and full support behind that. Because when it comes down to it, if you're in a position whereby you need to accelerate further because the market's moving quicker than you even imagined to begin with, or consumers are going to other competitors, generating greater investments. Mm. At that stage, investment is crucial. And so the CFO needs to be totally on board with this. And we're seeing more and more that, the concepts of agile and product for the CFO are, they're becoming really much more competent in these areas and understanding what the value is going to be.
Interesting. It's just a question I ask because, I'm not obviously necessarily from a consultancy, but it's interesting to see where the onus comes from, because you'd assume that these kind of things would be mapped out by the time they go to you. But I just sort of was more curious about the level of involvement.
I mean, the whole part about this is that our process, which we've been honing over 10 years, is very collaborative with companies. We're lucky to work across, with large corporates, with scale-ups, with startups, and whether that is talking to a board of a large corporate or talking to the VCs and the funders behind a startup, you're in a position whereby you're coaching and you're showing what the vision can be as to, this is where we can get to. This is what we need in order to be able to get there too. These are the things that we can affect. So we can't affect the organizational change that's required, but we can work with the teams to be able to put that in place from a cultural and from a process perspective. But they need to take control over that. And so the friction on acceleration for a business is primarily when they don't take control of their own processes and their own organizational changes that are required, and therefore slow everything down.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get big companies to work fast. It's absolutely the lifeblood of startups and scale-ups. I mean, they understand that acceleration in a marketplace, is about meeting that customer demand, differentiating from their competitors, because the faster you get things out to market which meet customer demand, the more differentiated you are from your competitors, therefore the better chance you have of winning out there, and that it mitigates risk and constantly validates the prioritization of what you're going to be producing next. And that's harder with the large corporates, but I think we're doing it very successfully with our clients. Well, obviously, we'd love to do it with a lot more clients out there. But it's about making sure that those clients understand that it matters. That this is probably the most important thing for their business.
Yeah. Do you see like a change on industry as well? You can imagine that there are some industries that it's like the margin for advantage because of a accelerated project would be much slimmer in some industries versus others. Is that actually the case when it comes to this? Or do you still think that, speed and quality is still wins regardless of the level of, competition that are really considering this? Because it is the reality of the situation, isn't it, on industry to industry?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think what happens is that in a lot of businesses, people concentrate, first of all, on creating greater efficiencies.
Mm.
So the first thing that happens is you sit there and think, how can I create efficiencies for the business and create efficiencies for the end customer? And so everything is about, it almost comes down to a cost-saving exercise. Obviously, you've got to invest behind it, but it comes down to a cost-saving exercise to be able to create those efficiencies. And I have seen companies stop at that point and say, that's it, we've done it, we've transformed, fantastic. We're a far more efficient organization. But actually, this is all about revenue growth. So once you create those efficiencies across your current portfolio, every company I know is saying, okay, what are the new markets and what are the new products that I need to be able to go in to be able to grow revenue? Because there's a certain amount of organic revenue growth which you can achieve through in your core marketplace, and you can make that organic revenue very, very efficient. But you know, over half of the opportunities in the marketplace will sit in new markets or new products. At that point, that's where you start to sort of hit a sort of innovation aspect, which says, you know, if I've got, let's just take, pluck from the air, an insurance company, and I'm mm-hmm. doing the standard types of insurance today, and I'm making that more efficient for the customer, and that's helping me transform my business. What does insurance mean to a millennial audience? And what type of product am I going to have to produce in order to be able to deliver that? It probably looks nothing like or very unlike the type of product set that I have at the moment. But if I'm going to enter that market with a new product, then I'm going to have to be able to innovate to be able to grow that or take advantage of that new revenue opportunity. So as soon as you start a business moving away from efficiencies and digital transformation into revenue growth, that's when they start to think more about being more startup in their focus, because they understand that they're launching into areas of what we call known unknowns. So, you know, using that Rumsfeldian concept of, you know, there's known knowns, known unknowns, and unknown unknowns. You know, the known knowns are what I'm doing in my current marketplace with my current product. The known unknowns are the fact that I know I want to get into a particular market because I can see it starting to grow. I'm going to get in there with another product, but I don't know how to do it to make it effectively. Then unknowns are unknowns of like, what's Google going to do suddenly announce, or Facebook or Amazon or one of the other big players going to announce, which suddenly sort of crushes my marketplace or looks at that. So there's a point whereby I think the shift, the easy wins that you gain from efficiency move for large corporates into the harder wins for revenue growth in new markets with new products. And at that point, you know, I think acceleration is everything.
Do you think that you can, you know, obviously now with all the experience that you've had, you know, you can confidently say, you know, to clients and such that this is what great looks like? I mean, it's a bit of a blanket statement, and you can read into it a little bit if you like, but do you feel that that's like an area that you should be able to proficiently say,
this is what great looks like? I think absolutely. A lot of our work, one of our first workshops that we do with leadership teams is often to talk about what we think great looks like out there across all different sectors. So who is doing great work in being able to triage customer service problems? And let's pick out the winners in there. Who's doing great work at checkout optimization? Who's doing great work at social integration? Whatever it might well be. And you pull together these case studies collectively, what we think and what the client thinks, because the client obviously has more sector knowledge often than we do, but we have the broader set of knowledge across all these different sectors. And as we said beforehand, customers expect the same type of quality across all sectors now, and not just in the sector itself. Everyone wants to have an experience like Uber across everything. And you identify what collectively, always has to be done collectively, what great is. And then you start to benchmark where you are against that greatness, you know, on the principle that you're never going to be able to be as great as example A. But if we were to achieve 50% or 70% of example A within a set time period, what's that going to do to our business? And that's when you can start to do some business modeling off the back of that, to be able to understand what the potential uplift for the business might well be. And then what you do is you then, after having identified this, is you go out with this sort of like this master plan, and then you talk with customers, and you've never, ever, ever stopped talking with customers. You say, what's really important for you? And you find that customers start to help you prioritize what's really important. And they say, yeah, that's fine. No, that's not really important to me. What I really want you to do is solve this problem, and like so-and-so. And so you start building up constantly this case studies of who's doing great for solving individual problems across their journey. Mm-hmm. We've got a fairly good idea. I mean, we do a lot of benchmarking exercises, collaboratively with clients to be able to understand on the customer journey who's doing every single element in their particular sector, their particular product, as well as they possibly can do, and then look externally to all the other sectors to be able to say, that's fantastic, because literally, you know, it's fine to say in e-commerce that Amazon has the most efficient checkout process, but that efficient checkout process is not considered to be, it is considered to be a base level for every other sector. It's how I want my transfers to happen at my bank. Right. It's how I want my financing for my car to be sorted out. All of the consumers are just expecting that now, because if I get it from Amazon, why can't I get it from everyone else? I mean, they're very demanding customers now. But that's why you have to go out and constantly validate and talk to them and get the insight from them as to what is important. So, you know, typically we are out talking to customers at least at the end of every couple of sprints of development work, if not every sprint of development work that we're doing, saying this is what we've envisaged. This is what, to our best of our ability, we think is really great. You tell us whether it's great or not.
Ross, sure. Getting close to the sort of, well, I think we're actually at the 30-minute mark. Surprised, Jesus, time absolutely flies. Jesus Christ. So, last kind of question for me. This would be like, you know, in a few words, since your time at SOMO, what has been the main learn? I suppose that's probably a really poor way of articulating it, but hopefully you understand what I mean. But the big greatest learning that you feel you've taken from, you know, maybe not just SOMO, but, you know, throughout your career, what's something that you perhaps hold true to yourself?
Strong opinions, lightly held. It was part of the culture of a marketing agency that I worked with called Hal Henry Chorlicott Lurie, who were campaigns agency of the decade in the 90s. And strong opinions lightly held, which is that you can debate as much as you like, but once you have an agreement on the way forward, whether you agree or disagree, whether you oppose it or not, you go with it. So that's about alignment, because if you can, you know, everyone has the opportunity to be able to voice opinions, but once an agreed direction is on the table, everyone gets behind it. There's no sniping, no issues. And if you can achieve that, and a culture whereby there's a discourse and then a very clear direction, and you follow that, then you're in a position of being able to get success.
Awesome. That's such a great answer. I love it. Thanks so much, Ross. It's been an absolute pleasure, mate.
Thank you very much indeed. Great chat.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturers Voice Slack group. See you next time.